Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to better cricket. It doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter what level of cricket you play. We're here to help you out in some way or another. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things here, and helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches. The first, safely back from his trips overseas, it's the director of coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gareth. How are you?
I'm very well, just doing a little bit of unpacking, trying to get organised. Obviously, Christmas has snuck up on me without me realising it. So, all good.
So is it going to be charcoal and flowers as presents then?
Very similar, yeah. Normal affair, mate. Normal affair.
Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Levery. Hello, Levers. All your Christmas shopping done?
No, absolutely not. still in coaching mode at the moment. So three more sessions to go today, then I'm done for Christmas.
Yeah, plenty of time then. Plenty of time.
Absolutely.
As it is that time of year, I wanted to take a little bit of a look back on the year and find out what we've all learned this year, because, you know, it's all a learning process. Even for guys who are at the top of their game, whether it's playing or coaching, there's always something you can learn. So as the year has gone by, I want to know really what everybody's taken from it and what you're going to take into next year, as well as something that you've learned from the previous 12 months.
Well, from my perspective, I mean, it's normally the last thing I learn is the thing that sort of sticks in the mind when I get this type of question. And having been out in India for the last couple of weeks, I've had the opportunity to mix it with a few mates and also, find a few more mates, really. And I worked with a coach this last couple of weeks called Itsu, who's based out of the Cricket Club of India, plays first-class cricket for Mumbai, is a spin bowling coach. And we connected him with a number of our spinners at school and learnt some completely different things than I've ever picked up on spin bowling before, which is fantastic, you know, to do that. And he had them spinning it with a different use of the fingers and wrist, which is very evident when you watch, in particular, Ashwin bowl. But also when you watch quite a few of the young bowlers bowling against us over the last couple of weeks, instead of that sort of opening the doorknob type thing for finger spin, he had the fingers and the wrists working more directly towards the target rather than going across the target. And the results, whilst really at the beginning of their journey with this, are very, very positive. And so that's something that I've learned, the orientation of how the wrists and the fingers work and how we can develop strength in both the wrists and fingers to assist that process was a real eye-opener for me. But, you know, as with most good coaching stuff, when you hear it for the first time and somebody presents it in the way like he presented it, you think, why the blimmin' hell didn't I think of that in the first place? And it was one of those moments.
Yeah, I love those simple and obvious things. And you go, of course, you know, that is absolutely fantastic. Do you reckon, just as a sidebar before we move on to you, Lavers, do you reckon that spinners are naturally inclined to be more experimenters than other types of positions? I always think they are, because you just see so much more discussion around spin bowling than you do around any other skill set. It's just, you know, they're always trying new things, it seems to me.
Yeah, I think it goes back to the fact that there aren't many specialists around, are there? There aren't many people that have done it. And also, there is a very different way of doing it in the subcontinent as in more westernised worlds, you know, more in England, Australia, South Africa. So they found a practical way of doing it as opposed to a theoretical way, I think, or maybe even in England's case, a traditional way of doing it. And that's why I love travel. That's why I love getting around, and I love getting different perspectives from people and having my eyes open, because we can get quite blinkered, can't we, just working with our own little cul-de-sac. So, spinners probably more experimental, purely because they have to experiment more because there's less people around that can actually give them that guidance. And that's a good thing in some ways.
You have to work pretty hard, don't you, if you experience other environments and you don't and you're not learning something. You're having to work pretty hard to close your mind off, don't you?
It's true. There's always something. No, definitely. And that's why I'd always encourage people to get out there. And I think that's one of the things about this show, isn't it? That we're gathering information. As much as we give it out, we're gathering information from all over the place and choosing whether we take that on or not.
And Levers, what's been a lesson for you this year that's stuck in your mind?
I think some of the things I've learned is about some of the people that I work with and some of the players that I work with, and especially when you have young players of a developing age. So obviously some of the guys that myself and Gareth work with will kind of be largely 18 or under, but what they can achieve sometimes is absolutely amazing. And yes, there will be periods where they might doubt themselves, or you might even doubt them a little bit into what they can achieve, but there are going to be down times in the progression that players have. But when they're really got their mind invested in, and they're committed to what they're doing, and they're at a stage with their body and their life where they know that they can, they understand what they're actually trying to do, the progression that can be made is enormous. And we've had some guys this year who maybe haven't had the biggest season last season, but then they've finished the season and they've attacked the winter already, and already in the space of 2 or 3 months, the progression they've made and the drive that they've taken from something previously has been amazing. And I guess sometimes you can look at a cricketer and think they're not doing well and automatically jump to the conclusion that they're not going to progress or they're not going to remain invested in the game in the way that you might have hoped, but so many of them see it as a challenge and see it as an opportunity where they can go and get better, they can go and learn more, and they really are desperate to do well. And that's been a really impressive point for me with some of the guys I've worked with post-season through to Christmas now, is the stuff that they've achieved has been incredible. And fortunately, and you'll start to see this, I'm sure, David, at your club, and Gareth will be seeing this with the guys that he's working with. You can have guys that are 14 and 15 and you've now put 2 or 3 or 4 years together with them, and the level of knowledge that they can have at that age is absolutely outstanding, and subsequently the detail of conversation and the amount that can be achieved in a session is becoming really, really good, and that's down to those guys and their understanding and their will to learn, because I guess there's a desire in some players and there isn't in others, and I'm really lucky that I've got a group that are really committed to that, and I've been amazingly impressed with them in the last few months.
And that's funny that you say that, because that's very closely tied to one of the things that's really stuck in my mind as well this year, is that whole idea around mindset, and something that has naturally sort of been something that I've always thought about, which is this idea of growing and trying to improve, and that thing that I've found out about this year but sort of instinctively moved towards anyway was this idea of a growth mindset. But even beyond that, even beyond the idea of, yes, we can all get better, we can all improve, we can all do amazing things if we put our minds to it, the way that you go about that has been a big revelation to me. Having read that growth mindset book by Carol Dweck, which you recommended actually, Gareth, and finding out that there's even more to it than just the idea of, you know, if you want to work hard, then you will improve. You know, it's even more than that. It's about how you approach everything that you do around your cricket, and whether you are looking to grow as a person, or whether you're looking to sort of just prove to yourself and prove to the world that you are already really good. And that the difference in those mindsets are so crucial. If you it works on a cultural level and it works on an individual level, but if you work towards that idea of growing and developing, then kind of the metric stuff looks after itself. You know, the winning and the scoring the runs and the taking of the wickets, that's something that you don't need to focus on, because if you focus on growth, then you'll enjoy it whether you do those things or not, but it also makes you more likely to do those things.
No, that's true. And what I like about it, the growth mindset stuff, is also that it considers feedback to be a real gift. And sometimes when people get feedback, unless it's of a real glowing type, people can take that on board in a very defensive fashion, and that's that fixed mindset, I suppose. Whereas the growth mindset is taking it on board, because rarely is feedback given to somebody with the intention of trying to damage somebody. It's normally given with the intention of trying to facilitate some development or to help them out, doesn't it? And it's the receiver who often goes into that fixed mindset type position. So we've worked at it quite a lot the last couple of weeks, because I've encouraged the boys and girls to give feedback to each other, you know, good and bad. What I like about that, what you're doing is this, and what I think you could do better is that. And obviously you get both responses. You get that growth one and that fixed one. And yeah, to be able to receive feedback in a growth mindset way is just amazing. And that's when we see real development in individuals, not just on the cricket field, but in all parts of their life.
I think, and you might see this, Gareth, as well, but sometimes for young people and people of all ages, I suppose, but honesty can be a pretty scary thing, can't it? And having a young cricketer be very honest with another one, and then being able to have a pretty open, honest conversation and a pretty can be a tough conversation at times, I suppose, when someone's got something that they think can help, but it can be taken in more than one way. It's tough to do, and the more that we can have honest conversations, the more that we're not clouding information that's coming towards us by already having an idea in our head of we're pushing it away or we're taking it in, the better, really. So yeah, being open to honesty and being honest with each other is really, really, really key in our learning, in our development.
Oh yeah, and that's where the culture thing comes in. You know, if you're constantly driving towards making sure that people are providing feedback in a way that is helpful rather than hurtful, and also then that people are accepting that feedback in the way that it's intended and not in the way that they think it's proving that they're rubbish because someone's pointed out a technical flaw, then that everyone's going to be improving there rather than it becoming some kind of a conflict. So this year coming I've already set the challenge down and set the theme for the entire year of whether we're going as a club we're going to be growing, whether we're going to be proving or whether we're going to be improving. I've already set that as a challenge, and the guys have sort of responded to that already. So you know, we'll have that as a theme through the year, and it's very easy then if you see someone proving, you can just say, oh, I can see you proving there, let's work on improving instead. And we'll see where we are at the end of the year. But I feel like that's going to be a transformation in the culture. Because we're already three quarters of the way there. So, you know, that last quarter will make a big difference. So, yeah, that's what I've learned, and that's what I'm driving towards for the next year.
Oh, quality, mate. That sounds awesome.
And I want to wrap up this section with a quick piece of news from the world of Pitch Vision. As you know, Pitch Vision are partnering with many, many organisations around the world, and the latest of those to start their installation is Afghanistan, where the ambition of the team to move from associate status through to full member status is so great that they're refurbishing their main training centre in Kabul. Pitch Vision is installing its SmartNet technology there, and you can keep up to date with all the latest of what's happening with that if you head over to pitchvision.com. Now it's time for the questions section on the show, and it's a pretty straightforward format. A couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show or readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website. We do our best to answer those questions, and then we decide on a prize winner from those two questions, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can send your questions into us for future shows by emailing coach@pitchvision.com or get in touch with us through social media, which we'll tell you more about towards the end of the show. And the first person who sent in a question this week is Kaiser. And Kaiser says, what do you guys think about sweeping? I say sweeping when the ball is in line with the stumps is inviting danger. A quality spinner will get the batsman out with a slight change in pace or variation in flight. I always advocate players use a straight bat when the ball is pitched in line and avoid horizontal bat shots to mitigate the risk. As long as the shot works, it looks good, but when it goes awry, it doesn't make a good result. The age-old dictum, when in doubt against spinners sweep, does not hold ground in today's cricketing circuit. Do you agree? So a bit of a rant more than a question, but, you know, great jumping off point where we can talk about sweeping.
Yeah, I suppose it is a bit of a rant, but it's a good one. I like it, and certainly we've seen in the past week Joe Root getting out sweeping to exactly that ball, haven't we? In the Chennai Test match and when England are trying to save the game. So it's topical as well as being, a good rant and a good personal view. I think as a starting point, and any plan, any game plan, it's got to be a starting point and we have to adapt off of it. So we'll talk about adaptations and context and concessions in a little bit, but I think it's a pretty good starting point, really, for sweeping. And certainly when I was making clearer decisions as a batter, I was sweeping the ball when it was pitching outside, or I could get hit outside the line of off stump, or it was pitching outside of my toes and outside leg stump, so I could have a free go at it. And that certainly was when I was sweeping at my best. But I think the higher standard of cricket you go, you get less of those balls to sweep, and that's the real challenge. And also you might have a mystery spinner, and certainly thinking back to my days of working with England, we had Murali, who was the ultimate in mystery spinners, and one of the notions that we talked about was actually sweeping, because if the players didn't know which way it was going to be turning, particularly when the pitch was wearing in subcontinent conditions, then often playing straight batted sort of guesswork defensive shots was only going to lead us to having some serious problems. So we actually did have, in certain conditions against that particular bowler, the notion of if in doubt sweep. So, and it was relevant then, it was better for us than doing the other, because we'd experienced the other and struggled like mad to achieve anything, and he kept getting us, bowling us out. So we used that to try and be proactive. But, you know, as I say, that's in spinning conditions against the best spin bowler of the time, certainly the best finger spin bowler of the time anyway. So that's one example of where you would probably concede on your original plan of just going to, I'm not going to sweep if it's in line with the stumps. But I think, you know, that is a really good starting point for any sweep plan. And going back to my own career, probably when I was at my best, I did that. But admittedly, I never played against the best spinners in the world on a consistent basis.
It is Lavers, isn't it? It is every shot in cricket is risk versus reward, isn't it? It's just whether how much of the risk you want to take in order to get the result that you want. And I guess the approach that was in the question is a valid approach, but also you're erring on the side of lower risk, and therefore, you know, you have less balls that you can score from with the sweep. But if you try and sweep straighter balls, the risk is increased, and you are, but you can get more runs because you can score off more balls, right? So, you know, you have to sort of make that assessment individual on how good you are at sweeping and what the conditions are, rather than have a fixed way of going, right, in all situations, I will always do this.
I think that's the key, isn't it? If you're trying to develop a kind of your method or your ideals for coaching and how you want to players to build and how you think that they should tactically approach the game, and you do that with words like always and never, then you're probably going to find yourself a little bit limited somewhere along the way. Both are pretty dangerous words to be using in coaching, I think, and as much as possible you have to have an open mind and accept that there's going to be a bit of flexibility, and there's always going to be have to be an element of decision making in there that's going to work for any specific situation. As you said there, there's the individual risk and reward in every shot, and then there's the long term risk and reward of, if I take a risk now, does that reduce the risk for the next over, two overs, three overs, in moving a fielder and give me a better opportunity? So there's a lot more to take into it than just, I should be doing one thing, I shouldn't be doing another thing. And very simply as well, a lot of it just comes down to, is this something I'm good at, or is this not something I'm good at? Some people who will take it on will find themselves getting out more often than the scoring a single, and obviously that's not the the kind of numbers that we want to have, but others will find that they can hit that kind of shot over and over again. We had a boy who played with us the last 3 or 4 years, or the last 10 years at the grammar school, really down here. And I generally say that as a sweeper and a reverse sweeper, I would be as confident as him taking on a cover drive, and because of that, the risk, the reward that we would have in our discussions as a group would be very different for the individuals. And when it got onto sweeping or reverse sweeping or doing whatever it was, the conversation for him was very different to a conversation with one of the opening batsmen or one of the fast bowlers or whoever it would be. So we've just got to keep things relevant to individuals, relevant to situations, relevant to pitch conditions, bowlers, etc., etc. And that does mean more conversations, that does mean more thinking, it does mean we've got to spend a little bit more time analysing what's going on in front of us. But if we're going to try and have a blanket rule that fits everything, then we're probably going to limit what our players can do and limit what we can do as coaches as well.
So it's nice to get a dictum to say, you know, something nice and easy to say, you know, don't sweep when it's on the stumps. That is, it's good to say, and it sounds authoritative, but because, you know, what's the alternative? The alternative of saying that is, well, actually, it depends. That's a lot less interesting, because then you have to get into a discussion about things in a lot more detail, and generally people like those little bites of tips of information, but they do fall down quite quickly if you're not careful with them, and you go, well, you know, I've heard such and such say this, so it must be true in all situations. So yeah, I'm agreeing with you there, Lavers and Garrett. It's avoid those little sound bites, and always try and look in a little bit more detail at things if you want to get the right result.
That is sometimes the danger of kind of modern coaching and discussion around coaching, that the way to get your voice out there and the way to make yourself heard is to say something, to say always, to say never, to say something that's going to make people stand up and listen.
Just, and that's another word that always makes me bristle, is the word just. Well, just do this. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, life's probably a little bit trickier than just doing something, I think. But yeah, that's the things you can. These are the things you can say, and people stand up and listen. But ultimately, most of the time, we need to have a little bit more flexibility in our approaches, and we need to be open to the differences of, as I said there, of match situations, players, batters, bowlers, umpires in the game as well. Lots of things that come into the factors, and it is that weighing up the pros and cons. And that's a player's ability to assess a situation, or a coach's ability to assess a situation, which is so valuable. And it would be great to a degree if we could say this is the one thing that works all the time. But once that happened, and if there was one thing that worked all the time, someone would sell a book and everyone would write their book, and there'd be no need for us anymore.
Yeah, just read the book and off you go.
Absolutely.
Next question is from Ritesh, and Ritesh says, is it true that facing slow seam bowling that anyone could play makes things too easy and pointless practice?
Slow seam is the hardest thing in the world.
I was sort of on side with you on that one, Sam, I have to say. When I read that question, congratulations on finding that type of bowling very easy was going to be my starting point. You need to teach me, because... God, I used to find that really difficult. You know, give me somebody who was getting it through at a good rate of knots any day of the week for me, and give me somebody who was spinning it square as well as a batter. I was more comfortable in those conditions and those circumstances than I was facing somebody who could, a spinner that just bowled arrow straight and didn't turn it. I used to struggle against, which probably will make a lot of people who smash that all over the place laugh, but it was true. I used to find it difficult. Any ball that's seaming, I mean, the big word in there is seam. So when I listen to that word and when I read that word, I'm assuming that the ball's going off straight. And any ball that goes off straight is a challenge, isn't it? And we see that in test matches now, where we see people bowling at 90 miles an hour at times and people scoring at 5 or 6 and over and looking quite comfortable. And then all of a sudden, that ball, that same pace of delivery starts to move. and then you're in business, aren't you? And again, we've seen it in the test series between England and India, is when the ball spun prodigiously, then the game moves forward. And so any movement for me is a challenge. Any time that the ball moves, particularly seam, because it's late movement, isn't it, seam? And you haven't got that time to adjust, even if it is sort of 60 mile an hour seam from your sort of club bowler that's been there for 1,000 years and bowled loads of maidens and picked up loads of wickets. So
I can assure you 60 is the top end of slow seamer. What I've seen.
I feel quite good about my slow seamers now, mate. Thank you.
We've got our opening bowler in our second team bowled average of 45 miles an hour.
Good lad. I'm loving that. Yeah, I feel quite good at
bundles of wickets every year.
I feel quite good at 62 miles an hour now. Then that's tremendous. So it's, you know, any time a ball moves, and particularly from seam movement, then, because if it goes late, it's very difficult to adjust. So I don't think that it's bad to face that. I do think it is bad to face that all of the time, because then when you do get exposed to different types of bowlers, then obviously that adaptation is going to have to be very rapid for you to be able to survive and thrive in that environment. So, but a mix of that sort of stuff is obviously really good, because what we can do against slow seam as a batter is we can really look to control our contact points, and that's often the thing that gets people out. People tend to get themselves in problems when they play a little bit too early. You've got to let that ball come on, and occasionally when you face like bowling machines, you know, a bowling machine at 70 mile an hour for good players is the easiest thing in the whole history of the world, because the ball comes on at a convenient pace and you can get away with making contact with the ball slightly earlier, you know, than you would do in a game. Whereas if you put that bowling machine down to 60 miles an hour, and this is something that I got from Matt Maynard actually, then if you get that contact point slightly wrong, then it just balloons up in the air and you look like an idiot. So I think it's really valuable to face that type of bowler, as long as you're then saying, right, my aim for this bowler is that I'm going to let that ball come as long as I can before making contact, because that is a good technical element that you can take across all facing all sort of bowlers.
I actually had that same discussion, but with a 14-year-old boy at school this year who said one of his objectives for the winter was to test himself against pace. And I said, my instant reaction was he wanted to test himself against 70, 75, etc., like beyond that as a 14-year-old kid. And he said he wanted to test himself against 50 miles an hour because he felt it was so easy for him to generate pace when the ball was coming on at 65, 70, etc., that when he dropped it down, he was having to create the pace. He was having to force the ball. And that was then creating issues with the way he swung about, issues with his technique, issues with his movement, which weren't as obvious when the speed was faster, but as you said there, probably easier. But that's great insight from a young guy who's obviously thinking about his game a hell of a lot, and progressing really well because of it.
Oh yeah, and the number of times I have the discussion, you know, when the machine's up and running and someone is walking into bat and they say, what speed is that on? And you say, and I say, you know, we'll start on 57 and we'll go from there. Oh, just put up a couple, will you? you're trying to make it easy for yourself by saying that. So I always sort of say, yeah, okay, we'll start a little bit slower and then we'll build up. And then so often we'll do a couple of buckets and I haven't changed the speed at all. So it's good to have someone actually spot that and go, actually, it's the other way. I want it to go slower. The other thing I was going to say about that was the question from Ritesh was, if he is genuinely finding it easy, which, I mean, I guess that's where the question is coming from. Either he is finding it easy or maybe someone he's coaching is finding it easy. Then the question then becomes, how do you increase the challenge, right? How do you make it so it's not easy? And like you say, Gareth, if it's a matter of focusing on making good contact with the ball and, you know, hitting on the downswing and all that positive stuff, then that might be enough. Or it might be a different type of bowling, or you know, a different type of challenge, restricting the amount the shots you can play, different things like that. So you can always increase, if it is genuinely too easy, you can always increase the challenge, can't you? There's millions of ways to do that.
Oh, definitely. getting somebody to bowl with a different weighted ball, even if that 60 miles an hour guy bowls with a 4¾-ounce ball, there's likely to be a change which is going to make you adapt. Something that I've seen a lot in India the last couple of weeks, not so much about seamers, but it could be applied in the seam, is people wrapping those really big, heavy-duty elastic bands around the seam to increase the size of the seam to get it to move more prodigiously. Is really good, because they don't get a huge amount of seam movement in India off of a lot of wickets, and then of course when they get exposed to it as batters, they find it really difficult. So they've been trying to develop that capacity by having a broader surface area on the seam by those really big, thick, heavy duty elastic bands going around it. So there's loads of stuff you can do to increase challenge on bowling machines. It's easy, isn't it? We can just put the speed up or increase the swing, but equally we can doctor cricket balls to make that challenge even more, getting one side really shiny, scuffing one side up, all of those sort of things is good things to do in practice, but obviously you need to stay within the realms of legality when you're on the cricket field.
Yeah, writing that down. Heavy duty elastic bands.
It's a goodie. It's a goodie. Absolutely.
And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. We are heading off now, but before we go, we're going to do a couple of little bits of admin. The first thing is to decide on the winner of this week's competition. The online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com is up for grabs. And we had Kaiser's question about sweeping and Ritesh's question about slow seam bowling and it being too easy. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Kaiser this week. I thought it was a good question, which got the old brain matter, going, and it was a bit of a rant. But those rants are often the things that stimulate conversation. So well done, Kaiser, this week.
Yeah, love a rant. Can't don't mind if it's not, even if it's not that much of a question. Even if you just want to send in an opinion, I'm sure we can easily discuss it for the 10 minutes or so that we do. And Gareth, if someone else wanted to get in touch with us, whether it was their rant or their question, and they wanted their chance to win the prize, how could they reach the show?
They could give us a call on 0203-239-7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. Social media is also an option. Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. You can catch up with us by the social media tools on pitchvision.com, of course. And you can find us on Twitter @pitchvisionacad. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can do that by subscribing. It's free. Just go to your favourite podcast app, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. And if you want to get previous shows or show notes or download the show onto your device, you can do that all from the Pitch Vision website, pitchvision.com/academy, and click on the podcast link for all the details there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Nice one. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, fellas.